brought to you by ConcordiaTheology.org, bringing you resources that support the vigorous life of the mind in service of the gospel of Christ.
Welcome to Lectionary Kickstart. We're sparking your thoughts for Sunday as you plan your sermon or teaching lesson. I'm your host and producer, Jessica Bordolo, here with Dr. David Schmidt and Dr. Peter Nafsker. They're both professors of homiletics here at Concordia Seminary, St. Louis. You can hear all about us in our introductory episode, but trust me, they're pretty good preachers. All right, let's get started. David, where are we in the church year?
Well, it is going to be Reformation Sunday. So the text appointed for Reformation, the first reading is Revelation 14, second reading Romans 3, and then the gospel is a choice of John 8 or Matthew 11, and the psalm would be Psalm 46.
But it's also the 22nd Sunday after Pentecost.
Dun, dun, dun.
So in addition to all these choices for Reformation texts, you also have options to preach from Leviticus 19, Psalm 1, 1 Thessalonians 2, and Matthew chapter 22. Lots of choices this week.
And you can find links to all of those verses on our website.
Reformation is so hard to preach.
Oh, I agree.
Oh, what makes it difficult for you?
There's so much baggage already on that Sunday that people know, people expect. We're going to hear about Luther. We're going to think about the 95 Theses. We're going to, some congregations, you know, wear red.
Right.
And kind of make a big deal of that.
The people in the that come to church are wearing red?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
They plan their Sunday clothes by the church calendar?
Yes.
Well, certain congregations do that for Reformation.
Yeah.
And so it's just part of their culture.
Yeah. I find it difficult because you've got this third thing that needs to be in the sermon, right?
Yeah.
And so the sermon is complex enough, right? Because
right.
you've got the text, you've got theology, you've got law and gospel, and you've got the lives of the people.
Mm-hmm.
And then you also need Reformation. And so it's just, it's hard. It's hard to get that, you know, to get it in and make it feel like it belongs there. I mean, that's kind of one of the struggles.
That
right?
And I also think it's hard because Reformation is all about the recovery of the gospel, and it makes it really hard not to just preach about the gospel instead of actually preaching the gospel.
Yeah.
And instead of engaging your hearers, it's tempting to talk about hearers in the 16th century. And so you just have to work kind of hard to make sure you're preaching the gospel to your people today.
Today. Yeah. Right. Yeah. Yeah. So there's challenges for the Reformation.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Okay, how about you, Jessica? How have you celebrated a Reformation?
I can't say that I've worn red on Reformation Sunday, but a lot of times I'm in choir, and there's extra choral pieces. Well, when I would teach high school Bible study, sometimes on that Sunday we would talk about it a little bit, especially if it was a part of the church service to kind of recap what was going on, give them an idea of why Reformation Sunday would be significant.
Do you think about Reformation during the week leading up to it? Or after it, is that on your radar?
When I was a youth leader, or I worked in a school, yes. Because in schools, that's the week where you do the Luther Seal coloring page.
Oh, my gosh.
You know?
Oh, my gosh.
And
my mom got into so much trouble for this. She was the room mother for my second grade class. I went to a parochial school, Lutheran school. She brought in cupcakes that were Halloween cupcakes.
Oh, my.
And my mother, being my mother, said very clearly, well, there's no way I'm putting Luther's seal on a cupcake.
All right. As always, I ask each of you to tell me which text you would choose to preach on and give me an idea of what you would say. This week, David, will you go first?
Oh, I will go first, definitely. So I would go with Psalm 46.
It's a great psalm.
It is a great psalm.
Yeah.
It's a beautiful psalm. I would probably address the Reformation by working with A Mighty Fortress as a hymn that we sing at Reformation, and it's based on the psalm. And so I maybe even an introduction that kind of sets people up with that historical reference. And that way I've touched into Reformation.
Yeah.
And what I find interesting about Psalm 46 or about A Mighty Fortress is that people call it the battle hymn of the Reformation. Right?
Yeah.
And if you kind of, you look at the battle hymn of the Reformation and you've got, you know, there's stories about I think there's like the King of Sweden had this played as his forces battled in the 30 Years' War. And some people say that the German princes sang it as they entered Augsburg in 1530. So, I mean, there's all this lore about this battle hymn of the Reformation. And the only reason I would stress the battle hymn of the Reformation is because one of the earliest broadsides that had the hymn on it in Wittenberg in 1529, it was called a hymn of comfort.
Huh.
Not a battle.
Yeah, that's a different.
It was a hymn of comfort. And I think there's where you could get that Reformation tie-in that talks about the gospel, mm-hmm. about the discovery of the gospel and how, you know, it's not, you know, Lutherans battling against everybody else, but it's Lutherans having comfort.
Right.
In the grace of God in Jesus Christ and sharing that comfort with the world. And so that's kind of how I would address the Reformation in a way that relates to Psalm 46.
And that would allow you to acknowledge what everybody is thinking about and then move them with you toward toward their life today.
Now, and you know, the Psalm is beautiful, and there's so much that you could do with it. But really, the one thing that just I've been thinking about as I looked at it was that the refrain. So, Jessica, if you could read verse 7 of Psalm 46.
The Lord of hosts is with us. The God of Jacob is our fortress.
What I love about that refrain is the juxtaposition of these two images of God. So the Lord of hosts. So this is that picture of Yahweh Sabaoth, right?
Mm-hmm.
This God who has these angelic armies, who is in control of all things, who can send plagues upon the peoples, who can cause the mountains to shake. And you've got all of the imagery in the psalm that deals with the works of God and his might. And, you know, and that power is frightening if it's against you, but if it's for you, that power is very comforting, right?
Yeah.
So you've got this Lord of hosts. And so I could spend time dealing with this. And I think it's helpful for congregations to know that language of the Lord of hosts, because we sing that in you know, the Lord's Supper as we come to the Sanctus, right?
Mm-hmm.
You know, so you've got that language of the Lord of hosts. So that's helpful. But then the phrase, the God of Jacob. So, I mean, you know, we could have said the God of Abraham.
Yeah.
We could have said the God of Adam. We could have said the God of Noah. We could have said the God of Isaac. Mm. Often we have the God of Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob.
Right.
But here we just select Jacob.
Hmm.
And it kind of is interesting to me that we're placing this almighty God who's in control of all of the armies right next to this description of God as the God of Jacob. Because when we think about Jacob, what are some things that you remember about Jacob, Jessica or Peter?
He liked to trick people. He liked to wrestle.
Right, yeah. So
he didn't like his first wife.
He's the He's the trickster who got tricked, right? So,
mm-hmm.
you know, he was the trickster stealing his birthright,
mm-hmm.
Stealing the blessing.
Mm-hmm.
He has to flee.
Right.
Right, he has to flee, and then God appears to him in a dream.
Mm-hmm.
So we've got that, but you've got the first wife, second wife thing, Rachel and Leah, so the trickster tricked.
Then when he goes back and he sends all his family ahead of him
right.
before Esau. And
yeah, I mean, what a jerk, right?
Please look at all these wonderful things I'm giving you. Don't
get
mad at me.
I know. Don't get mad at me for stealing your birthright and your blessing.
Right.
Right, yeah. And here's all my blessing that was yours. Here, look at it. Right. I mean, so you've got, and then the wrestling
mm-hmm.
with
yeah.
the angel that leaves him wounded. I mean, this is the God that is with us.
Hmm.
The God of this guy.
So how much, I got to ask Jessica, how much do you think how much would a preacher need to rehearse about Jacob? We just kind of threw out a bunch of stuff that is kind of familiar if you're pretty well versed with the scriptures. How much do people know about Jacob?
I think it would probably be a good idea to review a little bit of what Jacob did, like what you just did right now. Just, you know, I think that would be helpful,
mm-hmm.
especially because that's not all those things about him aren't in just one text that you'd
right.
hear in one lectionary text.
Right.
You'd need like an overview. But the idea of Jacob wrestling with the angel of the Lord, that's huge, because I think lots of times Christians might think it's not okay to wrestle with God. in the sense that it's not okay to have doubts and questions and try to figure this out and why would God do that?
Or as he did, to hold on to God and say, I'm not letting you go until you give me a blessing.
There was a back and forth there, and God invited it. He wrestled with Jacob, right? And so it's okay that we wrestle with those ideas. We're not kicked out because we're not sure. And so I think if the God who knows that you're still wrestling it still says, I'll be your refuge, oh, that's a relief.
I think
that would be great.
I don't know. There's something comforting about knowing that God's been through this before. So the more you can see yourself like Jacob, the more the fact that his God is your God will be a comfort to you.
Yeah, and that requires a little bit of humility because of the very thing we talked about with Jacob being, you know, a deceiver as well as being deceived. And so it's kind of humbles you to, you're in good company when you're with somebody who's not got it all together.
Right, right. And that's, I think that's a good way of putting it. Jacob is a guy who doesn't have it all together.
Yeah.
And sometimes the church makes people feel like they need to have it all together.
Yeah.
Right? Absolutely. Yeah. Yeah, there's no place for you here if you're not sure.
Right. You have to have it all together. And if it isn't all together, come back when you got it all together.
Yeah. Right, right.
Right. And instead, and that's, you know, when you don't have it all together, that's when you need a fortress. When you've got it all together, you think you don't need the fortress, right?
I
got it all together. I know what's going on. But when you don't have it all together, you kind of feel like, is there a place for me here?
Right.
You know, what's going on? I need safety. And the God of Jacob is going to be your fortress. So.
Well, that's where the difference between fortress and refuge to me is kind of interesting to think about. Because a refuge, we don't use that language a lot in terms of, at least I don't in everyday life. But the refuge is kind of the place where you flee to, a place of refuge, a place of safety that you desperately need.
Right, yeah.
And that brings with it not just the stability and the sense of kind of permanence, but also a place where maybe others gather who are also in need.
Yeah.
What words would you use to explain it to a high schooler? Who might not use refuge or fortress at all.
Maybe the place that you can call home. Not your home, but the place that you can call home. Right? Because for some high schoolers, they can't call their home.
Mm-mm.
It's a house and a fill of who knows what. But whatever is the place that you call home.
All right, Peter, what would you preach on?
Okay, well, last week I was thinking about 1 Thessalonians because it's 5 weeks in a row, and so I'm going to kind of linger on 1 Thessalonians for a little bit. And if you recall, kind of the A theme that you could have drawn from last week's text was hope, faith, love, and hope, Paul talked about. But this week, it focuses a little bit more, I think, on our common life together. And so I would think about... why don't we start with reading? Would you read verses 7 and 8 from 1 Thessalonians chapter 2, and then also verse 11?
But we were gentle among you, like a nursing mother taking care of her own children. So being affectionately desirous of you, we were ready to share with you not only the gospel of God, but also our own selves, because you had become very dear to us. For you know how, like a father with his children, we exhorted each one of you and encouraged you and charged you to walk in a manner worthy of God, who calls you into his own kingdom and glory.
So I'm reading this and I'm just noticing the family language. You've got in verse 7, Paul talks about how he and his people he was with were like a nursing mother taking care of their own children. They're affectionately desirous. They share with them not only the gospel, but their very selves. Verse 11, we were like a father with his children. And so this family language is really strong in this text. And so I'm thinking about kind of this, the Reformation life, the life, if you're going to go with the Reformation theme, thinking about how the gospel that was so central to the Reformation impacts and shapes and forms family. Okay. So what gets me on that path partially is verse 8. We're ready to share with you not only the gospel but also our very own selves. And I think about, the mother. I mean, think about your own mom who shares not only kind of a home, And of course, this is a mother that's there and present with you, but gives her very self. I mean, mm-hmm. the selflessness of parenthood, where you know, so many of us benefited in ways we can't even imagine from our parents, and a home being a place of sharing life.
Well, you know, how you learn love matters.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, how you experience love from your parents, it shapes the way you respond to stuff around you, the way you experience love, the way you show love. Yeah.
Yeah, and Paul's picking up on this language with the way he interacted with the Christians in Thessalonica.
Yeah, you know, there was Matt Hayner. He did a D-min degree under me.
Yeah.
And in his dissertation, I had never seen this before. In doing his dissertation, he was working with that passage in 2 Timothy about all scriptures inspired by God. But he pointed out what comes before that passage. And he says, you know, we like to emphasize the inspiration of Scripture.
Yeah.
But right before the passage, Paul says something to the effect of, but as for you, continue in what you have learned, knowing from whom you learned it.
Right.
Right? So that the, you know, the grandmother Lois or whatever, you know, I mean, you knowing from whom you learned it, that matters.
Right.
And like you said, Paul shared the gospel with the Thessalonians. They know who he was and from whom he learned it. And that gives a shape to
it. Yeah. And he shared with them, as he shared the gospel, he shared his life with them, right? And we talked about that last week a little bit with this short time he spent with the Thessalonians. But in that time, he was not just teaching them and then exiting stage right. He was sharing his life with them. That makes the gospel so much fuller than just information.
Right.
Even if it's comforting information and true information, but the gospel is so much more fuller than that. And so what I want to do in this sermon, I think, is reflect on this this family theme and to think about the gift of the gospel is not just the gift of information for me, but it's the gift of a life, of a community of people who live by the gospel. Now, when I think about this, part of what just kind of is blatant me in my face, and I think it's in all our faces if we look at it, is the truth that the fact that we generally suffer the most at the hands of the people who are closest to us.
Mm-hmm.
You know, to me, the evidence for sin, I always used to say in my congregation, if you want evidence for sin, just look in families.
Absolutely.
Because these are places that should be a refuge.
Right.
Should be a home.
Right.
Mm-hmm. And so often we give one another the most grief and we have the most disappointment.
Because we know one another so well.
Right.
And we know how to hurt.
We know how to hurt and we... Yeah. As good as the good news is, we still can't shed that impulse to to hurt one another.
Well, like the gentle mother that's taking care of her child, if you are that vulnerable to your kid, that you're giving your very self to that child can hurt you pretty badly.
Yeah.
Right? Because you love them so much, so it hurts more. It seems like it's all connected.
Okay, so I'm thinking about like this family theme and kind of a two main ideas that I want to communicate in the sermon. They're both from verse 8, is this sharing the gospel and sharing our lives.
Mm-hmm.
And I think I would start with the sharing of the lives, you know, this and think about. Now, you'd have to be a little careful with a family theme in a sermon because, of course, there's some people in the congregation who don't live with families, widowers, single people, that kind of thing. But I think you could invite people to reflect on most people have extended family and can relate to that. And even those who don't have much extended family, you've got the church as family. But I think you would want to, I almost hesitate when I talk about family and preaching, knowing that there are enough people there who don't actually go home to an immediate family you want to be sensitive to. But so sharing ourselves would be the first idea. And I would think about God has given us to live in community. He puts us in a family. And I'd bring up themes like vulnerability, like you mentioned, I think, Jessica, that to share your life is to make yourself vulnerable to others.
You open yourself up to being hurt a lot more than if you're protective and you kind of shielded yourself from really being a part of someone's life. Totally.
And especially if you've been hurt before, then the temptation is to really close off and to not let anyone in because you know how painful that can be. And so this would be kind of an invitation to share with your family, to share with the church as family, to share our burdens, to share our joys. And again, I would draw this back to Paul being there with the Thessalonians. He shared his life. I mean, go back and read in Acts kind of the situation that led to his getting leaving Thessalonica and the suffering that he shared, that he was sharing again with them, even in this letter. And so that sharing our lives, I would want to think about and cast the Christian life in those terms. And then the other main section I think would think about sharing the gospel. What does it really mean to share the gospel? Not just to hear it side by side in church, but to share the gospel with one another. And to this, my mind goes to the small cult articles.
There we go.
You know, that's where everyone's mind goes,
Dave. I'm sure it does. Yeah. Okay.
Well, I really appreciate small cult articles, of course, and don't mention them in the sermon, probably. That would be a bit of a distraction. It's Luther's kind of final confession. He thought he was going to die.
Well, no, that you couldn't mention that in the sermon, right? So you talk about the Reformation as the beginning and then say at the end of Luther's life.
Yeah, you could say.
Right.
There you go.
He made another confession, one of his final confessions. There you go.
So he thinks he's going to die, and they say basically people are already saying you said all sorts of different stuff. Could you write down for us, Luther, where you really stand here? So this is toward the end of his life, and he writes the small cult articles. And in the small cut articles, he has a section where he talks about how generous God is in his grace and that he gives us his grace in so many different ways. And he talks about preaching. He talks about the absolution. He talks about baptism. He talks about the Lord's Supper. And then he talks about this mutual conversation and consolation of brothers and sisters. Even the sharing of the gospel that takes place between brothers and sisters. And I don't know about you guys, but I find that increasingly important in my life. The sharing of the good news, the promises of God, sometimes holding each other accountable, speaking the commands to each other, but especially bringing the comfort of Jesus in conversation and to have an image of families and the family of God, the church, as a people who forgive, encourage, console one another. That to me, so I was in Wittenberg a couple years ago, and they've got a really cool museum for where Luther's house was, and they had these drawings of the family table, and God bless Katie Luther. They had like 20-25 people at every meal, students, servants from the area. I don't know who all these people were. They'd show up and they just had these family meals around this huge table. Where I'm sure it was not a perfect meal every time, but this idea that there's family, not just people you're related to, but brothers and sisters in Christ who gather to share life together, to share the gospel, those would be some connections if you're going to make a connection.
Well, you know what I like? What I like about it is that it's it's addressing a unintended deficiency that can happen. I think with the Reformation and the way the story is told, here I stand, I cannot do otherwise, and theses and all of the things we pick up on, it's always this solitary figure of Martin Luther standing against the Roman Church or against the whole world, right? I mean, it's this solitary figure, and it's kind of like it leaves us in kind of the position of being an audience in awe at what he did.
Right.
And this sermon is actually saying, and why did he do this? He did it for you to share your lives and share the gospel. And so it kind of takes us from this audience position to being participants in the drama, which I think is really nice.
Yeah, and that's the kind of thing that, I mean, you could have a little fun with the people wearing red
<That's>
at your
right.
church. We're a people here. We're not just individuals who now have been declared innocent, although we have, but we're not just that. We're also this people of God. And that could be, I think, kind of encouraging.
I'm going to go find some red socks now. That's all for today. We have free resources to guide your next step in planning at concordiatheology.org. Check it out. You can find more episodes of this show on Spotify, Google, Apple, If you'd like to see the show continue, subscribe, share, please leave a review. I'm your host and producer, Jessica Bordalo. Join us next week here at Lectionary Kickstart when Dr. David Schmidt and Dr. Peter Nafsker will spark your thoughts for next Sunday.
Well, there's no way I'm putting Luther's seal on a cupcake.